you've been watching the Supreme Court, Israel is being pounded by Iran. Sirens sounding over Tel Aviv as a barrage of missiles hit the nation. Let's bring in Jonathan Hunt with more. Jonathan.
Kaylee, Israel in general and Tel Aviv in particular have been under almost constant bombardment throughout the day today. One of the most intense bombardments, in fact, since the very early days of this war.
I'm Frank Vaughn. It is April 2nd, 2026, and we're going to begin today's broadcast with an examination of the things laid out in Trump's speech last night, what reality actually looks like. And this isn't Trump derangement syndrome. That's a very weak, from an intellectual perspective, label and argument against anybody who is critical of this war. It has nothing to do with it. There's a lot of things about the idea of America First and MAGA that would have been beneficial both to the Americans and to Canada. And I'm watching it go up in flames in Iran. People don't seem to want to reckon with the headwinds that this war is going to create politically for the Republican Party coming into November. But specifically, I want to address the claim that Iran's military is broken. Now, this is a Fox News clip. So if you're in MAGA or you're America First, you can believe it. And there you heard it, that Israel is getting pounded. Now, we've had multiple reports. This is from the Jerusalem Post, again, so you can believe it. Iran fires largest ballistic missile salvo in weeks on Passover. Buildings damaged. And it says approximately 10 ballistic missiles were fired on Wednesday. Now, that's one barrage. And all the media coverage, the media coverage that you can believe, talks about these 10 ballistic missiles. But if we head on over to, actually, we'll do this first. Israeli sources confirm Iranian missile strikes have 80% success rates as air defenses falter. The newspaper Haaretz has confirmed that 8 out of 10 Iranian missiles launched against Israeli targets are now reaching their targets. Remember, at the beginning of this war, I said that missile interceptors would be depleted in a matter of weeks, and that all the advanced heavy munitions, all the fancy stuff, all the standoff stuff would be depleted, at least what was in region, in a matter of weeks. Now they've pulled in a lot of that fancy stuff from around the world, and they're depleting those stockpiles as well, as Trump promises the war is going to last at least another 2 or 3 weeks. But there was no timeline set out in the speech last night. But just to finish up with this article, the report in Haaretz further noted that success rates have continued to improve as air defenses have become increasingly strained. That is success for the Iranian military, which is supposedly completely devastated. There's nothing left. It's been bombed into oblivion, bombed into the Stone Age. Israeli analysts, so you can believe them, observe that contributing factors have included the systemic exhaustion of the air defense network and the destruction of U.S. forward radar systems in allied Arab states such as Qatar and the United Arab Emirates, which have limited the quantities of queuing data that can be provided. The eyes have been blinded successfully by the Iranian military. And just one more sentence out of this that I think is important. Following the 8 out of 10 Iranian missiles landing, following mounting reports and growing quantities of footage pointing to the failures of Israeli and U.S. ballistic missile defenses, there's very tight control of social media in Israel. There's very tight control of what people can do. And in spite of that, we're getting the evidence out. We're only getting a sliver of the picture. It's not going as well as Donald Trump wants to portray. Now, I know his job is to project strength, but this is, you're facing the end of MAGA. You're facing the end of America First. You're facing the disruption of all of the valuable and good ideas that were proposed and underlie the entire movement. It's not a matter of agreeing with everything, but the idea that you need borders as a nation, that's a great idea. The idea that you need to clean up illegal immigration, that's a great idea. Getting rid of the fentanyl, kicking out the cartels, curbing Chinese influence in the Northern Hemisphere, these were all wonderful things. They're going to go away because of this war of choice that the United States got itself involved in at the request of Israel, who is not about to let them out. We'll talk about that next. But first off, or I should say back to, it's not first off now, we're second or third off. They talk about the 10 ballistic missiles, but Yesterday, critical threats, other places that cover this, it wasn't just 10 ballistic missiles. The Iranians successfully carried out 100 attacks yesterday, one of their largest barrages of the entire war so far, and certainly the largest barrage for a number of weeks. If the military is crushed, if their ability to respond has been completely neutralized, why is it they're able to keep targeting and blowing up high-value targets? And now, my concern is, with the United States off to bombing steel factories, I mean, steel workers, folks. Do you know one in your family? Do you know iron workers? Do you know people who work in steel or production or aluminum? These are not just military targets. These are civilian targets. These are fathers at work trying to look after their family, getting killed by U.S. and Israeli bombs. As all talk of liberating the Iranian people, of freeing them from the Ayatollahs, of regime change itself, as we, at the same time as we pretend that regime, I shouldn't say we anymore, it's not we, it has nothing to do with me, as the Trump administration pretends that regime change has happened, the regime is still firmly ensconced, and instead of freeing the Iranian people, he's promising to bomb them back to the Stone Age. That means everybody. As the Israeli-American forces bomb desalinization plants, expand their coverage, very likely, since Donald Trump promised in his speech that there will be 2 to 3 weeks of very heavy bombardment, that means they're probably going to go after the energy infrastructure, power production infrastructure, maybe not the oil. But I have to ask you, at what point does Iran just say, you know what, enough's enough? They may not have hit our oil infrastructure yet, but they're going to, and we might as well respond while we still have the ability to. Remember, Iran only has to survive in order to accomplish their military objectives. Now, though, I am going to play a clip. It's not from Trump's speech last night. I'm just going to read you quotes from Trump's speech last night. We got to go over this. Trump said, this is a quote, "Core strategic objectives are nearing completion, and we are on track to complete all of America's military objectives shortly, very shortly." Seconds later, he says, "We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong. Screw the Persians. Screw the Iranian people. They're all going to hell together." I guess because it's an interesting thing. Donald Trump criticizes NATO after saying that he doesn't need NATO, after claiming he wants to get out, which, by the way, I'm not even against that. The idea of Fortress North America, the Don Roe Doctrine, requires a paring down of U.S. overseas involvement. It would be good if the United States got out of involvement in Ukraine. It would be good if the United States got out of involvement in the Middle East and focused on the problems that plague North America. And it would be good if Canada and the United States could mend their fences and get back in business together and just focus on making everybody rich, rebuilding the infrastructure, taking all of these billions that are spent defending other countries and focusing it domestically on the problems that we have right here. This would benefit Canada directly. But instead, we're doing the imperialism thing. And then he also says, in the meantime, discussions are ongoing. But you can't be very shortly done the war if you're going to bomb and heavily bomb for 2 to 3 weeks. It's incredible. He says, also, he said, we're now totally independent of the Middle East. But the reality is, global oil prices are up something like 60%. I mean, they're up 10 or 11 bucks so far today. I mean, let's just look at that real quick. Let's see where we're at. Where are we at? 10.95, and then Brent is up $6. And look at this chart. Anybody that's just, like, it's a meteoric parabolic run since the start of the campaign. It's had a few little hiccups along the way, but it's funny because I see in my comment section, these gyrations, when it goes back down, people are like, oh, oil's back down. The daily ups and downs don't matter. The trend is up and to the right because the market is figuring out that there's no exit strategy. None whatsoever. So you think you're independent. Maybe in terms of supply you are, but you're not independent of global pricing, which every single American and Canadian is paying. This short-term increase in gasoline prices has been entirely a result of the Iranian regime launching deranged terror attacks. But the reality is, there would be no so-called terror attacks. And they're so-called because if the Israelis and the Americans can launch a war of aggression the second time in less than a year under the cloak of negotiations. Wouldn't that be a terror attack of its own? I mean, they're bombing universities. They've hit schools. They've hit hospitals. They've bombed civilian infrastructure. They're now off to bombing steel production plants. They've hit desalinization plants. It fits the very definition of terror. I mean, there's terrified Iranians by the millions in Iran right now, suffering under the regime which you claim to want to free them from, or you did. That's off the radar now. You know what else was absent in the speech? Any talk of ceasefire or any talk of the enriched uranium? Didn't mention it at all last night. That's interesting. The changing tone. And this is why I don't understand, and I encountered it this morning again on X as I try to reacquaint myself with this as my tech issues are fading into the past. Encountering people making the argument that Trump has been consistent since the war started. He's all over the map. I don't know how people can't see it. Like, at this point, you either have to be willfully blind, or you're just ignorant, or you're a shill. I mean, it's incredible. The Israeli-American offensive against Iran led directly to the Strait of Hormuz being closed, led directly to the global crisis we're coming into. And, like, we're talking about oil today, folks. But the other prices that you might want to watch long-term, maybe it's not an issue today, wheat, soybeans, corn, all the staple crops. It's not an issue today, but in 6 or 7 months, the issues of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz that lie outside the oil, because price is one thing, but markets can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent. Markets are only concerned about one thing, gains, whether on the short side or on the long side. But the long-term impacts, that requires a different layer of thinking, strategic thinking. With the disruption in fertilizer shipments, we are now on April 2nd. I've been a farmer most of my life. Crops can only go in the ground within a given season and be fertilized within a certain time frame. And when you miss that time frame, you can't make it up. It's kind of like puberty blockers. Puberty has its own natural course, and if you interrupt it, you can't get it back. It's the same with a season's crops. If you don't do the job in the timeline required, you don't get to make it up anywhere. The famine that's baked in gets worse by the second, gets worse by the hour, gets worse by the day. That's not fear-mongering. That's just straight facts. But I want to make sure that we have one thing straight. All of these consequences, this entire chain of consequences, arises from the Israeli-American decision to attack Iran. It's not Iran's response, because their response doesn't exist without the assault on Iran, the war of aggression. It's not a war of defense. It's a war of aggression. Anybody that says otherwise is either delusional or just a shill or in denial. This is another quote. Iran recently killed 45,000 of their own people who were protesting. 40,000 was the highest number I'd heard so far. This is the first time I've heard 45,000. I don't know why Trump and all the other pundits feel the need to exaggerate this number, because it's the number's bad enough on its own. The human rights organization, set up by independent voices to monitor events in Iran, has the number at 7,000. Like, 7,000 should be bad enough on its own. You shouldn't need to exaggerate it. But how many people are going to die as a result of the knock-on effects of the Israeli-American assault? Look, when Trump said he was going to keep the United States out of wars, there was a lot of real reasons why I liked that. And there's a lot of real reasons why I don't like this, because ideas and promises matter more to me than being on the winning team or personalities. Another quote, regime change was not our goal. We never said regime change, but regime change has occurred because all of their original leaders are dead. They're all dead. Well, Trump multiple times, and in this article, they're all sourced here, here, and here. We can go through them all, but we don't have to, because you are smarter than this. You know that regime change was introduced and put on the table. Unconditional surrender were the words of Trump at one time, but every single day, as regards this war, he says something completely different. And most of it is flat out false. And you have to wonder why. Is he doing a PR campaign? Is he trying to make it up as he goes? Is he getting his talking point? Does he even know what the hell's going on anymore? I don't know. I don't have those answers. All I know is that I can see with my own eyes and my working brain the inconsistency, and it should be clear to everybody. I'm just going to read from the article. When it comes to leadership, the latter has, this is Khamenei, however, been replaced by his son, Mujtaba Khamenei, arguably signaling more of a continuation of the previous regime than a change, because the Iranian constitution is working. Important leaders in Iran's government structure are still in place since before the war. President Masoud Pezeshkian. Pezeshkian came into power in 2024. Trump refers to him as a new guy. He's not new. He predates both wars, because there's been two. Or maybe this is just a continuation of the same war. Two different attacks under a flag of truce. Treachery that destroys trust, which is a whole other issue. How can Iran trust the United States or anybody in negotiations when you attack them under a flag of diplomacy and negotiation and truce? But Pezeshkian, one of the most important figures in Iran's political leadership, is still alive, still making statements. The foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, in Canada, the foreign minister is arguably the third most powerful, some say the second most powerful person in our government. Still alive, still making statements. The Chief Justice is still alive. And all of the positions that are being rendered vacant are being filled rather quickly by the functional Islamic Republic. Now, I want to take a moment of accountability. I am not a perfect man. There's a lot of things over the last year that maybe I glossed over or I chose not to talk about because it seemed nitpicky in comparison to the overall mission, to the promise of Fortress North America. But this kind of goes to that point. Trump claimed during the speech, $18 trillion in investments during Trump's second term. A White House dedicated to tracking the total U.S. and foreign investment lists a total of $10.5 trillion. So Trump exaggerated the already likely exaggerated number of $10.5 trillion by a factor of almost 2x. According to the list, the two largest contributors are the UAE and Qatar. Now, since the entire relationship between the Gulf Cooperation countries and the United States is based on the petrodollar and based on American guarantees of security, those security guarantees have failed miserably. These places are suffering damage under Iranian missiles, and the United States has proved completely incapable of rendering them safe. We'll get to the fact that aircraft carriers are staying as far away from Iran as they possibly can, and why that might be. We're going to get to that next. But the fact is that security arrangement, if the war ends tomorrow, is going to be under review. Because if the war ends tomorrow, the Iranian regime, in spite of what Trump is saying and how he's trying to spin it for his base, because listen, what is left of the base is the most sycophantic, fanatical Trump supporters there is. They're not going to win elections. But now he's signaling to them, trying to keep them. He's not even trying to win back the independence at this point. People need to understand how much trouble this spells for November, even if it ends tomorrow. Now, if it ends tomorrow, the regime survives. Iran will go back to building more ballistic missiles. They are incentivized now more than in any other time in the last 40, we talk about 49 years. They're incentivized now more than ever to get nuclear weapons. Do you realize this war is going to trigger the exact thing they said they wanted to avoid? Iran had 40 years to get nuclear weapons. If they wanted them, they'd have them. And they didn't. Now they're incentivized if they survive. And that's survival because of proximity. Remember, I've talked in the past about the importance of proximity. I think it was Clyde Dosomething who said that Canada's greatest economic asset is its proximity to the United States. He was totally right. But even if he wasn't, the reality of geopolitics dictates that Canada and the United States are Siamese twins, practically. We're right beside each other. We benefit when we deal with each other. Iran is right beside the Gulf Cooperation States. They share the Persian Gulf. Their dependence on each other is greater than the Gulf Cooperation countries' dependence on the United States. Look, they can switch to trading oil in yuan, and be no worse off for it. I think we're seeing the end of the petrodollar. Now, The largest contributors to that 18 trillion number or 10.5 trillion number, woefully exaggerated numbers, are the UAE and Qatar, who may decide to review this arrangement, each pledging over $1 trillion in investments. However, it is not clear how these countries would make such investments because the figures far exceed the size of their economies. In 2024, the UAE's GDP was just $550 billion, while Qatar stood at around $220 billion. Where are they coming up with the trillions in investment that they've promised? Maybe they'll raid private citizens' funds, but it's going to be hard to cough that up. These are all press releases. These are all headlines, and these are all aspects of Trump's braggadocious, blowhard, salesman approach to politics, which was much more tolerable when the global economy, when the very nature of the reality of commodity markets, which, because I don't really care about derivatives. I care about real things. I care about fertilizer. I care about oil. I care about real tangible stuff. And they've blown up the entire flow of real goods coming out of the Middle East, which is going to have dire consequences going forward months. It's not like if the war ends tomorrow, everything is fine. First off, the war is not going to end, but the consequences will play out over time. This isn't like a TV channel where the show just ends and everybody goes back to normal. It doesn't work that way. It's going to require a complete restructuring of how things function in the world. And I don't think the United States comes out the winner. This was always going to happen too. And I've said this before, but there was an easy way to do it. Peaceably. The United States could have just exited its obligations and reconcentrated its efforts on North America, trading with the world, building bridges, kicking out foreign influence, and everybody getting rich without the war. It could have been done without the war. The only reason the United States is in this war, and I think it should be clear to everybody right now, is because Israel, Mossad, the Zionists control this administration, and they're not about to let the United States out. And that gets us to this. Israeli strikes struck the home of senior Iranian figure Kamal Karazi, a key player in back-channel efforts with Pakistan to negotiate a ceasefire between Tehran and Washington. Karazi was said to have been seriously wounded while his wife was killed, dealing a potentially fatal blow to already fragile prospects for a peace agreement. They're not going to let the United States out. Those troops that are being concentrated in the Persian Gulf right now are going to get the Americans tied to this war long term. I can't believe at this stage that the 24 to 48 hour war enthusiasts converted themselves to the 2 week war enthusiasts, and then it was the 1 month war enthusiasts. Now we're talking about at least the entire length of April, the United States will be involved. And if they commit ground forces, they're going to be there for a long time, and it's going to be a disaster. And people just keep moving their goalposts. You see, I don't have that privilege. I can't do that. I have to hold people accountable for the things that they said. And in the meantime, every time, and Trump actually came out and he said this. He said, I don't want to say the name of the people we're talking to because they'll get killed. And people thought he was talking about the Iranians. It's actually the Israelis. Anytime there might be a serious inroad to getting this thing stopped, the Israelis are going to kill that, because they can't afford to allow the United States to get out because they don't have the manpower. They can barely handle what they've bit off in Lebanon. And they're getting hit every single day by Iranian missiles. They're stretched thin. They need American blood to continue their war effort in Iran. They can't do it themselves. They have to get that 340 million person manpower pool. It's not 340 million, I'm sorry. The population of the United States is 340 million. It's a hell of a lot higher than the 9 million Israelis. They need the manpower embedded in that population to do the dirty work for them. And so this is why I said, back during the opening campaign, when eventually the Americans went in and they bombed Fordo and they bombed those nuclear complexes, that the Israelis were desperate to get the Americans tied into this war. Because once they're tied in, the Israelis can keep them in. And that's exactly what the Israeli government is doing, forcing the Americans to stay, even as they have a cooperative administration in the form of the Trump administration. They're cooperative anyway, but Israel is still working to make sure it controls all of America's war objectives. You're seeing that play out in real time with serious consequences for the world. Now, we've talked about on this channel, and it's been talked about on many other channels, about the troop deployments that are ongoing. But here's another deployment. U.S. deploys third aircraft carrier to Middle East amid preparations for Iran invasion. That's Ynet. This is, again, Israeli news source. So those of you in MAGA and America First can believe it. The USS George H.W. Bush, a Nimitz-class aircraft carrier, departed Naval Station Norfolk in Virginia on Tuesday alongside its accompanying warships en route to the region. Now, we have got to listen to what Trump says here. This is probably one of those things that annoys military planners at the Pentagon and annoys his staff, is that Trump likes to get off script. He likes to go off the teleprompter, and sometimes he says things that maybe he shouldn't say. Quiet part out loud. Let's listen.
Every 32 seconds, boom, boom, boom. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning, so we said, okay, I think we're in trouble.
Words on screen, President Trump acknowledged Iran's attack on the world's biggest aircraft carrier, the USS Gerald Ford, in the Gulf. Recounting the midnight strike on the supercarrier, Trump said Iran hit the warship from 17 angles.
We knew there was a problem when we noticed at 1 o'clock in the morning, every 32 seconds, another airplane, a very fast plane, was coming off the deck of an aircraft carrier. That's actually the biggest aircraft carrier in the world. And every 32 seconds, boom, boom, boom. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning, so we said, okay, I think we're in trouble. But they were ready for us, Johnny. And we were ready. He said we were ready. And then they hit us, and they came from 17 different angles. They were here, they were there. We ran for our lives. It was over.
And it just so happens that the Gerald Ford, the flagship of the fleet, the biggest, most modern, advanced aircraft carrier the United States has, is now out of the war, effectively. For at least 10 or 11 months, effectively a year, docked in Croatia. And they tell us it was caused by a laundry fire, by excessive lint. Now again, there are pictures circulating out there that seem to show extensive damage to the hull. I don't know if those pictures are real. Things are very easy to generate in AI, so I'm not showing it. But given Trump's words and given the status of the Ford, do you actually believe for a second? Do you actually believe for a second? First off, the story about the laundry fire. But secondly, that the Iranian military is combat ineffective. If it effectively, which I think is what happened, and I think history will bear this out, that the Ford was actually struck and knocked out of combat. Now, you can believe that the U.S. military's control of those soldiers and those service people who are on the Ford, the control of their social media and their control of their ability to communicate to the outside world, you better believe that the fear of God is in them. Court martial, jail time, horrible, horrible things. And of course, they're military trained, so they're not going to have the loose the slips, especially when they've been in service now. I believe the duration of their tour has been extended for over a year. Remember, this is the carrier group that performed the operation that took Maduro out of Venezuela, already extended, and then they were extended again and shipped to the region. And now they're stuck in Croatia for another year. Maybe they'll be able to fly home. I don't know. Will the U.S. military let them? Returning for a minute to the pace of narrative change, it can change within a speech. It can change within a matter of hours, which is why it's very hard to believe anything that comes out of the administration at this point. This was only a couple days ago, March 31st. Marco Rubio tells Al Jazeera that Trump prefers diplomacy. After last night, do you really think diplomacy is the approach that Trump prefers? Even Alex Jones has figured it out. Now, Alex Jones, say what you want about him. I've said some things about him over the years, but he has saddled his wagon to MAGA and America First for over a decade. He has risen and fallen, if you don't include the Sandy Hook debacle, by MAGA. And now, emotional Alex Jones sounds alarm on Trump's failing health. They call him a far-right broadcaster. I hate that label. Alex Jones has claimed President Donald Trump's failing health is now so bad that MAGA needs to stage an intervention. A tearful Jones even compared Trump to his late grandfather, who suffered from dementia and was dead a year before he physically died. Dementia is horrible. Speaking on the Alex Jones show on Tuesday, the host became emotional when he referenced some of the president's most visible health issues, including his swollen ankles. You can say what you want about Jones, you can say what you want about his views, but I believe his concerns are genuine. And he can't tell himself stories anymore. It looks like he's fallen completely off the wagon. The man was clean. He was working out. He was looking really good. And it appears he's back to drinking because this is crushing for people who actually believe in the ideas and the promise of this idea. What I call the Don Rowe Doctrine from my Canadian perspective, the thing that I was most hopeful for. This isn't good news. This isn't enjoyable. It's not Trump derangement syndrome. It's reckoning with the facts. We're in big trouble. Global demand destruction, subsidies, empty gas stations, rationing, flight cancellations, export limits, and price controls. This is not a future cast. This is what's happening already in many parts of the world. It's creeping in around the edges. Energy rationing, fuel rationing, gas stations that are empty. It's not fear-mongering, it's reality. This is something I wanted to actually get to yesterday. Loose lips. Has this stripper revealed Trump's Iran invasion plan? Exotic Dancer says U.S. troops are spilling secrets and spending big. A stripper has revealed that U.S. troops are sharing top-secret deployment dates while she doles out lap dances as Donald Trump gears up for a bold invasion of Iran. Nervous men, young men, horny young men, in the military, have always turned to strippers, and it's amazing when you're in the arms of a female what can come out of your mouth. This is known. This is why intelligence operations create honeypots. They know how men operate. And that seems to be, in the age of social media, it's a weakness. Everybody knows at this point, you don't need this stripper to tell you, that a ground operation is coming. The dispatch of a third U.S. carrier, like, they can gaslight about diplomacy, they can gaslight about peace negotiations, but again, actions speak louder than words, or at least they should at this moment in time. You should have learned up to this point that you shouldn't be believing the words coming out of the administration. Another headline from Bloomberg, Czech billionaire warns oil spikes may soon risk airline failures. For Dubai-based billionaire Gediminas Zimelis, the aviation industry is experiencing a sense of deja vu amid the Middle East conflict. Grounded planes, plummeting demand, and no clear sense of when it might be over. It's certainly not going to be over in April, according to the remarks we heard last night. During the COVID pandemic, so-called pandemic, 6 years ago, when a global shutdown hit demand for planes on short-term lease from his Avia Solutions Group, he shifted to air cargo to keep afloat. Now he plans to move a significant part of Avia's 145 jets from Europe to Asia and Brazil. It's not just the airline failures. It's not just the rising cost of jet fuel. It's not just the disruptions. There is this narrative out there that this entire operation is about countering China. But China is winning every day that they wait. Remember this. Trump's ambivalence on Taiwan opens a historic opportunity for China. I think I talked about this before. How China is just waiting in the wings. Watching this play out, their hand gets stronger every single day as the United States is forced to deplete its inventory to fight the Israeli war in Iran with American blood and treasure. The situation in the Asia Pacific gets weaker for the United States. The petrodollar is coming apart. The BRICS nations are gaining strength. And you can see when a billionaire aircraft owner, airline owner, is redeploying his assets to Asia. He's not doing that because he thinks he's going to wait it out over there in some state of failure. He's going there to make money because that's where the money is. That's where the production is. That's where Main Street is. Remember, we've talked about on this channel how the choice was made by wealthy North American financiers and politicians over the course of 30 years to deindustrialize, to gut our manufacturing base and ship it overseas and exploit that cheap labor so that we could all have cheap products and they could make a fortune as the leaders of those companies taking advantage of that cheap labor and those loose environmental practices. And who cares about human rights? Apple with the suicide nets around the buildings so that when the workers wanted to escape their slavery, they couldn't even do it by death. That's what we did. We outsourced Main Street. We sent it overseas. That, my friends, is where the money is. Remember I talked about on this channel how you can talk about the financial catastrophe, the 300% debt to GDP ratio that China has, You can do comparative things and you can say their financial situation is just as bad as the United States. And yes, on paper it is. But their position in terms of Main Street, their position in terms of commodity control, silver we've talked about on this channel, but also the flow of many other strategic goods, their position has been getting stronger and stronger as they've strategically sought to control the real economy, the commodity economy. They may not be producing oil, but they've certainly been doing everything they can to make sure that they control adequate supply of oil. But it's not just about oil. It's about everything else. So while everybody is LARPing and pretending this is some kind of 5D, infinite D, I don't know what D we're on, chess, I'm watching, from my perspective, China just get stronger and stronger and stronger. And I have to wonder, when will they make their biggest power play yet in the Asia Pacific? How long will they wait? Probably another month, at least, as the United States pounds itself into weakness in Iran. It's so sad to see. It doesn't make me happy. I'm Frank. I'll see you in the next one.